We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Welcome back into the Kia Studios on a Tuesday night. It is the John Chuckery Show. 404-741-0929. That's our phone line. That's our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to interact with us. Streaming online at 929thegame.com. Download your radio.com app. Follow us on social media, and I would suggest you jump on at 929thegame on Twitter, because I've got in studio with me right now the great Theodore Long. You can follow him on Twitter at TeddyPlayAlong. You can follow myself at JMCH316. And if you go to at 929thegame on Twitter, we cut a little promo on one of my co-hosts. And like I said, Teddy, I do what we had to do. Listen, I mean, you step out of line with the rattlesnake, right, sometimes you're going to get bit.
Well, I mean, I think we, you know, served him just right. I mean, to think about it, he got it off real light. You should have hit him with that stunner.
Now, let me ask you about that, because you famously took a stunner in 04.
Yeah.
I've talked to guys before that have said, that's like a badge of honor to take a stunner from Stone Cold. You know, when they had the invasion angle with WCW and ECW and all that, what's his name? Hurricane talked about that there were a couple of guys that were just in the ring that weren't supposed to get stunners that they said, give me a stunner. It's like become a badge of honor for guys to get a stunner. I don't know if you felt that way about it, but it kind of puts you in history when you get one of those.
Well, and he's true. There were a lot of guys who were just standing there just begging to hit me, give it to me. So, you know, for me to be able to take it, I was really honored too, you know, because back then that was the thing to do. And if you can remember, you know, he chased me around it with the ATV.
Yes, with the ATV, yes.
So,
yes.
You know, so me.
And then Rob Van Dam was out there too with you, because he stopped you.
So. Oh, yeah. So, man, all those days were the good days. There was the Attitude Era. I mean, golly, things were on and popping. So we were having a great time.
You came right in the middle of the Attitude Era to the WWE. You know, I always say this about the Attitude Era, Teddy, is that, you know, the Attitude Era was only about 5 years long. It was like 97 to 2002 is really the only time. But it's so revered. It's so memorable. It's amazing how even to this day, even guys like me, we hearken right back to those Monday Night Wars, to those Monday nights and those tremendous Raws and the paper. It's amazing how, you know, just that little snapshot of time for something that's been around for so long with wrestling has always captured the imagination of people.
Well, you know, like you're saying, everything's true. Wrestling has certainly been around, you know, like long time, like you say, that Attitude Era was a time, you know, but things are not bad now. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of changes has come. You know what I mean? Things are not the same, but, you know, I guess that, you know, that changes with time. You know what I mean? I guess you have to change with stuff. But I think the shows now are good. You know, we've got a lot of young up-and-coming talent that I believe are going to be superstars in the long run. So it just takes a time with a lot of the young kids that are coming up now, because a lot of the young kids now, they just think that they just want to be on WWE TV.
Sure.
You know, I'm on Monday Night Raw, but that's not all to it. You know, you're on Monday Night Raw for a purpose.
Right.
And I remember one time we had a meeting one time, and Vince McMahon told us, he said, how can you go to the bank and draw money out when you haven't put any in there? So, you know, that made a lot of sense. So what he was telling us is, you know, if you ain't making no money here, then you don't be looking for no check. So that's what a lot of the young talent got to learn now. You're there to draw money. You're there to make money. And also there to, you know, to polish your craft and to be successful and to be a big superstar. So to be a big star and to draw money, too, you ain't got nothing to worry about. You're in, player.
It's funny that you say that, because that's the Al Snow theory. Al Snow always says that when they ask what's the best wrestling match of all time, he says, what's the one that made the most money?
Exactly.
That was always his theory about wrestling, is that, hey, if you ain't making the most money, then it ain't the best match that's on the card.
No, it's not. And then that's what you want to do, too. When you get in that ring, you know, a lot of guys like professionals, the Randy Ortons, those guys get in the ring. Well, they know their job. They know what they're supposed to do, and they enjoy doing that. And they have, you know, I've been with Randy. Randy would get seriously mad if he had a bad match, because that's not what he wanted. You know, that's not what the people wanted. But, you know, some days you have bad days. And to speak about that, you know, the late Chris Benoit, Benoit. I was real good friends with him. Mm-hmm. And I remember one time we were overseas, and, you know, Chris would always go to the top and do the big frog splash. Well, one night he did that. He went up to the top, and, you know, to me, I just thought he stayed up there just a little bit too long, you know. So when he come back, I said something to him. But, I'm just talking, and I said to him, I said, Chris, I said, no, he asked me, he said, what'd you think? You watched that? I said, yeah. I said, but when you went up, I just about just stayed up there just a little too long. He flipped out. You know, he just got all mad, you know, because he thought he had did something bad. And I didn't mean it that way. He just asked me, you know. Right. So a lot of people take it real serious. And Chris Benoit was one of those people. Randy Orton, he's another guy, takes it serious. Seth Rollins, a lot of those guys, they're real serious about their craft.
So you started even setting up rings, running errands. What was it about wrestling that drew you into wanting to be a part of all that?
Well, I think that just came along. The way I got started, you know, I would go down to the TBS studios. I would take my son. At that time, he was maybe 5 years old, I think. Maybe we just go down on Saturday morning just to watch the TV taping. And by me going down there, I just happened one day to run into Abdullah the Butcher. And he had just came to town, and he didn't know, you know, his way around and stuff. And like I said, it's just gift work of God, I guess. And I got with him to show him around, to, you know, drive him around, and because he didn't know. And so every Saturday morning, he would come and get me and take me to the TV station with him. So by me being with him, I was able to get in the back. And so I just kind of made myself busy. I would start going to the ring, getting jackets. When the guys would take their stuff off, I would take the jackets back. I would clean up the studio. Like when they'd leave a big mess, I'd clean it up. Nobody asked me to. I just did that. And so I was just in the right place at the right time. And one day the promoter, Louise Manning, she asked me about by putting the ring up, taking the ring down. Mm-hmm. That was the first job I got. And I took that job. And one night right here in Atlanta, right here at Marietta, Georgia, we went to the Cobb Civic Center. You know, it was big time wrestling there back in the day.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And we went to the Cobb Civic Center there, and I put the ring up and everything. And about, showtime was like 8 o'clock. About 7:30, they did no referee. So Louise Manning, she was a promoter, and she came to me and said, well, Teddy Long, you're going to have to referee tonight. I said, well, I don't know what to do. I never referee. She said, oh, don't worry about it. So I'm going to send out, get you a shirt, and the guys, they'll work with you. And the first match I had that night was Black Bart and Ron Bass. They had a Texas Death match, and they were bleeding all over the place, and I had no idea what was going on, so I got real scared the first time. I think I jumped out of the ring, and I left them. And then the timekeeper made me get back in the ring, you know, and so it was just horrifying because they were just bleeding everywhere, and I didn't know what to do, and they scared me to death. Really, I was scared, and the way I think, no, they used some type of object, and I picked the object up, and I threw it out of the ring. And I heard Ron Bass tell Black Bart, he said, did you see what the referee just did? And it hit me then like I must have did something wrong, and, boy, they was all over me. They was cussing me. And the thing that got the heat off of me is when it was time for the match to end, Charlie McGowan, God rest his soul, Scrappy McGowan, you might remember Scrappy, yes, he's a referee, yes, back in the day, his dad, he rang the bell too quick. And they got mad with him because he screwed the finish up, wow, and they forgot about me. And that's how all the heat came off of me. But that was the first match I had. Then I had Pat Tanaka and Buddy Landale, God rest his soul. Yeah. And that's how I started refereeing. And after the refereeing, I started riding with Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert, another one, God rest his soul, and Kevin Sullivan. And they started finding out that I was a disc jock on the radio station, I could talk. And then that's how I got into managing. They went to Jim Ross, and Jim Ross was kind of running, was doing the booking, and they told Jim Ross he was a guy that could talk, and that's how I started managing.
John Chuckery Show. We got Theodore Long, WWE and NWA Hall of Famer, in studio with us. Your favorite guy to travel up and down the roads with?
I would say Mike Chioda,
really?
One of the referees.
Referee, yeah.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. Mike Chioda was a great guy to travel with. I also travel. Me and Kane traveled a little bit, not a whole lot, you know, because Kane was kind of a loner.
By the way, he's coming back, too.
Yeah.
He's coming back. He's going to do a couple of things for WWE coming up here.
Yes. And I rode with him, and the only reason Kane would always look out for me because I always went to the gym, and Kane would go to the gym, and so he knew that. So he would always call me and see if I had a ride and stuff, and so he was just a sweetheart of a guy. So, but the most guy that I rode with in WWE was Mike Chioda. He was, because before Mike Chioda, I kind of rode by myself.
Who'd you ever have real heat with? Give me somebody you actually had legit heat with.
Jesus, I could count them on my fingers. Oh, God, I don't know, man. I probably had heat with a lot. Probably Ole Anderson, I know.
Really?
Yeah.
Of course, he was kind of cantankerous anyway.
Yeah,
so.
He hated my guts, so I had heat with him. Let's see. Superstar Bill Dundee, I remember him. He was another one. Used a racial slur at me one night. I was refereeing. Never will forget it, Elberton, Georgia. So he just screamed out the N-word right in front of a whole lot of people. So, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, like I said, I had a lot of heat with people because maybe some of them, I'm not trying to sound racist, but I'm just being honest about the color of my skin.
Yeah.
And, you know, thanks to God I made it, and I was able to prove to a lot of those people that said I had no talent, that I wasn't going to go nowhere. I was able to prove to them that they were wrong. And I mentioned that in my speech at the Hall of Fame, that all the naysayers and said that I never would make it and I had no talent. Well, Vince McMahon proved them wrong. And so God just blessed me to get the opportunity to overcome all that other mess that I had to go through. To touch on this, I just finished going to do a show for Harley Race. God rest his soul.
Yeah,
he just passed.
Just lost him, yeah.
And Harley was a great guy, and I had a chance to see him before he passed.
Tough guy, too. He was a legit tough guy. Yes.
And I told the people there in Troy, Missouri, you know, because a lot of people didn't know what me and the deal was with Harley Race. And I told them, I said, well, when I was trying to break in, I said there were a lot of people that were mean to me, and Harley made them leave me alone. And so I never did forget that.
Did he pull the gun on Hogan in the bathroom?
Well, I wasn't there, but I think that is the truth.
Okay. That's the rumor and innuendo, as they say in the wrestling world, you know?
Like I said, I wasn't there, but I think that's the truth.
What would be something that would surprise us about Vince McMahon? He's one of the most fascinating people, I think, and I've always said he'd be like one or two on my list to meet of all time. What's something about him that might surprise us?
Something about Vince that might surprise you, that he can really be nice. I have seen him, you know.
Bruce Prichard talks all the time about how great a father he is and things like that.
Yeah.
That behind the scenes
yes,
stuff.
Yes, that would really surprise you because I have seen him nice and I have seen him playing with his grandkids and, you know, just having a ball. So, and I watched that and then I also watched him when he's on a tyrant, you know.
Right.
But he's a real nice guy. And the thing Randy Savage told me, I'll never forget this, you know, God rest his soul. He said, Vince McMahon will take care of you if you do your job and especially if he likes you.
Yeah, he just did something for Harley Ray, right?
Yeah,
he sent Harley to the hospital.
Atlanta.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
That's why I was saying I was able to go see Harley before he passed. Yeah, they paid for everything and everything. Yeah. So, Vince is a nice guy, you know what I mean? And I can understand sometimes why the man's a tyrant. You know, the man got a $1 billion operation he running, and one little thing could screw it up. So, you know, I can understand. And I like working for Vince because Vince did this for me. He kept me from slacking. You know what I mean? You can't slack with him. You got to stay professional at all times and stay on top of it. And I had the tendency to slack, you know, get comfortable, you know, just, oh, well, I'll do it like this. No, not with Vince. You didn't do that. You stayed on your P's and Q's at all times. And I like that about him. He really made a man out of me. He really did.
Last thing for you, Teddy, as we get ready to go to break. How did you find out about being inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame?
Well, they called me. I got a call from Vince first. I talked to him. A lot of people didn't know that. And so, and I got a call from him, and he didn't tell me that, but he just called me and just started shooting this shit with me a little bit. You know what I mean? So that's kind of cold. You know, you have to kind of look through that. You know what I mean? But I didn't know that. But he called me, and me and him just joked around and talked on the phone and then hung up. And then I think maybe two or three days after that, I got a call from the office telling me that I was going to go into the Hall of Fame.
Wow. And then did you decide JBL and Ron Simmons were going to induct you in?
Well, they asked me who would I like,
yeah.
And I told them the APA because, you know, we had a lot of stories. Me and Ron and APA rode together, and I think Vince had that call, too, but they told me about them first, and then I agreed with it. They asked me. I said, oh, yeah, of course, yeah, the best two guys in the world. So that's how that kind of happened.
Well, man, Teddy, it's been a great pleasure to have you in studio with us. I thank you so greatly for coming in.
Well, before we go to break, let me say this too, man. I want to thank Richard here too.
Yes.
Richard,
he's done a great job
here in Morrow, Georgia, opening up the school and giving young kids, you know, the opportunity to try to learn this sport and
Richard,
to try to make it somewhere.
Give us the website and Twitter and all that real quick before we go to break, where everybody can find you guys.
So the website is face2facewrestling.com. and you can reach us there. All the information is on there, just to cut it short for you. Also, this Friday night, we do have a show starting at 8 o'clock in Morrow, Georgia. That show, we are going to be giving out school supplies to the children that do come to our show. So if you've got kids, bring them on down. Come into the show. You'll enjoy it. We'll hand out some school supplies.
You got it. Guys, really appreciate it. When we get back, Andy Demetra is going to preview Georgia Tech football with us. It's the John Chuckery Show, live from the Key Studios, Sports Radio 929 The Game.
Let's do it.
Ready?
Taking a look at all the college football action. This is College Football Preview. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is the John Chuckery Show live here on a Tuesday evening. Well, we're continuing our look all around the world of college football. Last night talked a little SEC football. We're going to go over to one of the locals right here in town for the ACC, Georgia Tech. We go out to the waitfor.com hotline. Andy Demetra is joining us. He is the play-by-play voice of the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets. You can follow him on Twitter at Andy Demetra. Andy, really appreciate the time, man. Thanks for jumping on with me tonight.
John, thanks for having me. Thanks for letting me talk Tech football with you.
So, obviously, it's going to be such a culture change, and it already has been on campus with what Jeff Collins has brought. So, as we start to look at this team, let's start with the most important position on the field. A lot of people think Lucas Johnson, because of his passing ability, is going to take that starting spot at quarterback. Obviously, Tobias Oliver got a lot of play last year. Do you think it's a situation where Collins may start with a guy like Oliver just because of his experience, especially against a team like Clemson? Or do you think he'd be willing to take a Lucas Johnson and, even though he's coming off the injury, just throw him right in the fire?
Well, all four quarterbacks, I should say five, six quarterbacks on the roster, have gotten a lot of reps dating back to the spring. And so Jeff Collins has gotten a good view of all of them, their passing ability, what they can do in sudden change and in situations all up and down the field. Lucas Johnson, I think, has the best arm of anybody on the roster right now. If anybody watched the spring game, they could probably confirm that. But James Graham is somebody who can make plays from an athletic standpoint that probably no one else on the team can duplicate. Tobias Oliver, like you said, has taken a lot of meaningful snaps in high leverage road situations in the ACC. And so each brings something different to the table. And I think that evaluation process is continuing. The one thing that all those quarterbacks have told us is that it's not as severe a transition as people from the outside might have anticipated, because all these quarterbacks have talked about playing in very similar systems, similar schemes in high school. So the acclimation process hasn't been as steep as some might have feared or suspected. And that's good. That's benefiting Georgia Tech as they learn the playbook and get an understanding of the expectations of this offense.
Yeah, the good news, Andy, is that the two running backs that ran for the most yards last year, in Jordan Mason and Jerry Howard Jr., are both going to be back for this team. So, if anything, it gives them something a little bit to rely on. Tell me a little bit about Jordan Mason. You know, took over for Kervonte Benson, had a really nice season last year. I think it was 6.1 yards per carry, seven touchdowns out there. Is he a guy that looks like could be that next breakout kind of 1,000-yard type of back that we're used to seeing at Tech?
I think he's certainly a candidate. Jerry Howard is as well. Both run a similar style. They're kind of a hard to take down on first contact type of back. Jordan is very good, waiting for holes to develop, reading coverages and understanding where the hole is and waiting for it to clear. The biggest adjustment for these guys, and this is something they talked about yesterday, and I chatted with Jerry about this yesterday, is adjusting to the blocking out of the shotgun, where you're working as a sidecar to the quarterback. It's totally different now. It's a sharp choice. Georgia Tech's decorated former running back, now running back coach at Georgia Tech. He's been on these guys a lot about taking as much pride in their pass blocking as in when they have the ball in their hands. And that could be one of the differentiators in who gets those first team reps, whether it's a Mason, whether it's a Jerry Howard, or whether it's a guy like Donte Smith, who was an A-back in the previous system. He's a shifty back. He can get to an edge fast. He's somebody who also should be reckoned with when we talk about who's above the line come the Clemson game.
Andy Demetra joining us here on the waitfor.com hotline. He's the play-by-play voice of Georgia Tech football as we're in the middle of our college football previews here on 92.9 The Game. Defensively for this team, it seems like the further you get away from the football, the better that they are. And we know the struggles of this team the last few years of trying to rush the quarterback and get the quarterback onto the ground. How much of a rebuild is that defensive line and linebacking core? How much is Jeff Collins really having to try to work, to, especially for a guy who's used to a style that's really aggressive up front, make lots of sacks, makes lots of turnovers?
Yeah, I think the biggest unknown or uncertainty in this team, John, is on both sides of the line. We'll talk about the defensive line. Tragically, the player that Georgia Tech was counting on the most to anchor that front was Brandon Adams, and we know he passed away in March, and that left a void not just on the depth chart but in the locker room and in the Georgia Tech community. And so he's not an easy person to replace. Georgia Tech has moved to Hazel Lee, who's played his first 3 years in offensive line, back to the interior defensive line, where he had more of his experience in high school, just to firm up the depth at that position. They're going to play some guys in sort of that outside linebacker defensive end hybrid, get guys who might have repped at linebacker earlier in their careers up close to the line to see if they can get a pass rush. But you're right, the ability to penetrate the pocket and force hurried throws has not been a strength of Georgia Tech. In fact, last year, they were second worst in the country in third down defense. I think a lot of that was based on their inconsistency in getting a pass rush. We'll see what Andrew Thacker can dial up. He's not afraid to get creative, get exotic. But I think the fortunes of this defense might very well hinge on the consistency up front.
Andy Dimitra joining us here on the WaitFor.com hotline, previewing Georgia Tech football. He is the play-by-play voice joining me on the show tonight on 92.9 The Game. We talked a little bit just briefly about mentioning about the secondary. Tariq Carpenter, Trey Swilling, that seems to be the strength of this defense. I don't know how many great passing quarterbacks they're going to see, but at least they feel good maybe toward that back end.
Oh, no question. And nobody feels better about that than Jeff Collins because he coaches the defensive backs. That is his area of focus. Trey Swilling is a guy who I think can mature into an all-ACC-type player. Wanya Thomas did not see a lot of time at safety last year. He was a freshman All-American, a kick returner. He is a star in the making. Just the prototypical safety size, rangy, athletic, plays with great knowledge and understanding of the game. I think he's going to be a force in that defensive backfield for Tech. Other guys like Tariq Carpenter, whom you mentioned, a hard hitter. Caleb Oliver, another guy at safety who likes to lay the wood. That is the area where Georgia Tech has its greatest depth. I think their biggest playmakers. And look, Jeff Collins' defense last year at Temple, they had 31 takeaways. That was the third most in the nation. He's very much instilled this ball-hawking mentality into his defensive backs. I expect a lot more press coverage, which is to the relief and joy of Georgia Tech fans. And we'll see if some turnovers can follow, but he certainly has the raw goods in the defensive secondary to get that done.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is a John Chuckery show as we're on the WaitFor.com hotline. Andy Dimitra joining us, the play-by-play voice of Georgia Tech football, as we're doing our college football preview of the Yellow Jackets here. So maybe one of the underrated aspects of this team, maybe, Andy, the kicking game, the return game, that seems like an area that's pretty solid that maybe we're not talking enough about.
Yeah, there are very few question marks in the kicking game. Presley Harvin led the ACC in net punting by more than a yard last year, even though he didn't get first-team All-ACC. You could make a compelling case he was the best punter in the league last year. And then Wesley Wells goes from unheralded walk-on true freshman to a guy who finished his first season 9-for-9. He's being challenged, though, by Brenton King, who is a guy who started the year at starting place kicker for Tech. He was bothered by a groin injury that he didn't make much of a fuss about, but he admitted afterwards affected his ability to kick accurately from distance. So, I think between the place kickers, the kickoff, and the punter and Presley Harvin, it's unsung, it's unglamorous. You hate for it to be maybe the strength entering the preseason, but Georgia Tech should feel good about its ability to flip the field and still finish off drives and stall out with points. They feel very solid in the personnel they have back.
Andy, you know, the speculations about what this team could be kind of run all a full gamut. I mean, they were picked last in the division in the ACC media days. I've heard some people like Chris Landry say they might be lucky to win three games this year. But obviously, look, you start with number one in the nation. You're going to end with the preseason number three in the nation. But in between, the reality is that there's literally not a ranked team right now that is on that schedule. You know, can Georgia Tech maybe try to navigate its way and maybe find itself, you know, maybe even as the season moves on, maybe actually even think about a bowl as a game this year? Is that kind of maybe one of the goals Jeff Collins, from a record standpoint, has put out?
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that, John, because it's a transition, but Georgia Tech doesn't want it to be a transitional year because that implies that they're going to take several steps back. Let's not forget, it's not like Jeff Collins inherited a roster that went 3-9 or 4-8. As is the case with many coaching changes. This team won seven games last year. They've beaten Virginia Tech three straight years. They beat Miami last year. They should have beaten Pittsburgh on the road, a team that ultimately won the Coastal Division. They beat Virginia, which shut out South Carolina in the Belk Bowl. This team has some talent at the skill position. Not all the pieces are going to fit right away, and Jeff Collins knows it takes a while for him to reshape the roster in his image and with the physical profile that he desires. But Georgia Tech has some solid players. They like the schedule. They know it's going to be difficult. But they feel good with who they have, and I think they're very galvanized by the energy that they have brought into the program since Jeff Collins came aboard, where they're going to hopefully come up and surprise some people and exceed the expectations, which has sort of been Georgia Tech's habit under Paul Johnson, exceeding expectations in preseason. That's a trait they certainly hope will continue with Jeff Collins.
You know, Andy, let's expand on that a little bit. I thought Jeff Collins did himself a lot of good at ACC Media Days. I thought he represented himself in the program really well. And you know, sorry for the pun, but I think there is a lot of buzz about this program right now. And I think one thing about Jeff Collins, and I've talked about this, and I was on the sideline for the spring game this year, so got a chance to see these guys up close, is, you know, they got to get back to Sunday-level players. And it feels like Jeff knows exactly what he wants to do. Coach Collins knows exactly what he wants to do with this program and bring those kinds of kids in. And I think, honestly, Andrew, you're already starting to see some of the results just even in the little bit of recruiting that he's been able to do on campus.
Well, think about this with Jeff. When last he was at Georgia Tech, he was the recruiting coordinator under George O'Leary, and he signed what remained the highest-ranked recruiting class in Georgia Tech football history. He understands how to recruit at an elite level at Georgia Tech, and he has done it before. That's what has enthralled the fan base as much as anything. But Jeff Collins is somebody who believes in the full potential of Georgia Tech as a recruiting powerhouse, not just in the ACC, but in the Southeast. It felt like in years past, some of that had gone untapped, and you already started to see the fruits of his recruiting muscle already. I can't speak on those players because I'm associated with the university and the institute, but anybody out there can read some of the inroads that Georgia Tech has already made with Jeff Collins as the guy who's driving the bus when it comes to recruiting. There's no question that he's somebody that has caught the attention of a lot of other schools, and by proxy, Georgia Tech, as this team that can be an awakening giant on the recruiting trail. And Jeff Collins knows that because he's done that. That is a huge asset moving forward for the Jackets.
Final thing for you, Andy. Is there kind of a noticeable feel on campus just with his energy and his enthusiasm and excitement? I mean, look, I love Paul Johnson, but at the same time, I mean, we're talking about two kind of different energy levels when we talk about these two coaches. Is there, you know, kind of a tangible difference that you can kind of feel and see when you're around campus?
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned Paul because, look, his record speaks for itself, but it is okay to say he had different sensibilities as a coach than what Jeff Collins had. Which I think fans, that energy has been contagious. You have felt it ever since the spring. Social media videos that Georgia Tech is putting out, that's not phony energy. That is genuine enthusiasm, excitement, and whatever perceived talent deficit might exist for Georgia Tech as it changes over its personnel, that can be compensated for with a lot of passion and energy, which Georgia Tech has clearly shown an abundance of. They believe in what Jeff Collins is selling. They believe in his vision and principles of his program. They've rallied around it. And I've seen that firsthand from being at practice and being around these student athletes. That's going to count for a lot as they instill a new culture here and can weather them through whatever ups and downs they might experience in year one. I'm excited to see how that'll translate the one loss column for the Jackets, but that energy has not only infected the players around the program, it's infected the fans as well. And I can't wait for that home opener versus USF to feel the buzz at Bobby Dodd Stadium and to see the kind of reception Jeff Collins, the Jackets, will receive. It'll be a lot of fun.
He's calling me Team Hav? I'll cut a promo on him. You kidding me? Lordy. Join my friend Harper LaBelle, my good friend Harper LaBelle. Anyway, can't thank Teddy long enough. We will definitely get him back. Now, he is inviting me. I'm going to go ahead and say it on air. He's invited me to come down and be a ring announcer at one of their events. I said, well, I got a voice. So, you know, I've got the voice for it. I can handle it. So what do you think, Jarvis? We'll go hang out at one of those wrestling events that he's got going on, and we'll go be a ring announcer, cut a promo or two, you know. Yeah, Yeah, I mean, we're going to do it. The Georgia Rattlesnake. By the way, I would encourage you, go to at 929 the game on Twitter. We got a video posted up there. Very funny promo that that we cut. We'll have another video up here actually in about an hour or so because we got somebody coming in that's got to get their gift. So we will have some fun. So having fun with you here. 404-741-0929 is the phone line. Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. At JMCH316, at JMCH316 on Twitter. Follow him at JarvisD90, at JarvisD90. Be a part of the show that way. Always the best way to interact with us here on the show. Watching some Braves baseball. They're up 1-0. Let's see if they can hang on to the lead. Need to at least keep this thing going. Mike Fultonevich, I guess, not much trouble. I hadn't had a chance to watch the game thus far, but seems like everything so far so good for the Atlanta Braves. Speaking of holla, let's get to What's Bugging Chuckery.
Don't look now, but somebody out there just got Chuckery ticked off. Like, that's hard.
Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
It's time for What's Bugging Chuckery on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Well, from the file of just when you think you've heard everything, here comes another story. So, former Ohio University standout DJ Cooper was suspended from competition by the International Basketball Federation, better known as FIBA, back in 2018. Well, now, according to a report that has come out, okay, his two-year-long suspension, again, two-year-long suspension that he had came after he failed a drug test, but not in the way that you think. Wasn't like he had illicit drugs, wasn't like he had PEDs, anything like that. Nope, nope. He was suspended because he tested positive that he was pregnant. Cooper, who was trying to join the Bosnian national team this year, tested positive for human chorionic gonadotropin. That hormone is produced by the placenta in pregnant women. It says, according to EuroHoops, the urine used to try and game the test came from Cooper's pregnant girlfriend. The suspension means that Cooper is ineligible to play internationally until June of 2020. Now, I'll give the guy credit and fault. I get it. If you're doing something illegal, get somebody to test it. But how do you not know that they can find out through urine samples that your girlfriend is pregnant? Or find out that there's elevated levels of estrogen or what have you? Like, how stupid do you have to be to think that using your girlfriend's, your pregnant girlfriend's urine would get you through a test? By the way, 4-0 now is... Freddie just went bombs away. So there you go. It says here, they say here, it's not the strangest thing ever done. Remember Boxo Canelo Alvarez? He was suspended for using performance-enhancing drugs, but he fought off initial positive test results by claiming that he had ingested bad meat. Well, I don't know. This might be even dumber. Like, I would tell you that this is actually a dumber way to find yourself getting suspended because you used your pregnant girlfriend's urine. You've got to be kidding me. You wouldn't have thought that, I don't know, because they're going to test for everything at that point. You couldn't figure out that they would have everything about it? I don't get it. I don't get it. But listen, I guess when you're in FIBA, you're going to get, you know, FU'd at some point if you're trying to use your girlfriend's urine out there. And that's what's bugging Chuckery. 404-741-0929. That's our phone line. That's our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line if you want to be part of the show this evening. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll get into a Falcon flyover. Here's some of the audio from Dan Quinn and from Austin Hooper as training camp officially ended today. They had what? A light, quick practice, as I understand, and that was it. Yeah, light, quick practice today, and that was it. So when we get back, though, Tom Brady put his little measly home up for sale for just a couple of bucks. I'll give you that story next. It's the John Chuckery Show in the Kia Studios, Sports Radio 99 The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.